Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Welcome to the Weird Things podcast. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Brian Brushwood.
Hello, you beautiful citizens of the universe.
And Justin, actionnewsgame.com, Robert, actionnewsgame.com, Young.
Yo, what's up, ladies and gentlemen? We're doing it. We're doing a big thing. Everyone's getting a game if you go to actionnewsgame.com.
Everybody gets a game. Well, what's it take for me to get a game?
Oh, you just got to go to actionnewsgame.com and back our Kickstarter. I think we're only 7 backers away from unlocking the Beatles breaking up card. If you want to be able to report on that news, then go there right now. You could be a part of unlocking the release of Abbey Road and the rumors circulating that at that point the Beatles had already gone their separate ways.
Oh man, I hope they get back together.
I mean, to be honest, that'd be pretty great. That would imply some extraordinary technologies to see that.
No spoilers. Gentlemen, I'm going to give you some spoilers, though. Spoilers of the future.
Oh, okay. Well, go ahead. Spill them, Big Andy.
Big Daddy S. That's what we call you. You're the spoiling king.
The main event.
Stranger Things, more like spoiler things. This guy, he's the king of the
We got what's going on in the world of this is I'm telling you, you know, we can only tell you people out there so many times things are afoot, things are a-changing, and then it's like, yeah, okay, whatevs. I mean, our audience is actually cool. They don't say that. They're like, yeah, no, we're on to it. We're into this. But I'm talking to the public at large. You know, we were the ones banging the drum about, like, SpaceX reusability, all this sort of thing. Like, it'll be a thing. We're like, oh, okay, it's a thing. And then you get people like, hey, have you seen this? It's like, yeah. We've only been talking about that for like 5 years. Yeah, well, maybe if you shut up about it, we would listen. And it's like, stop it, Mom. I don't have to come visit you guys anymore.
Fairly universal conversation I think we've all had.
Yeah, you've all been there.
All I'm going to say is that I've heard conversations with Andrew and his mom, and this is shockingly accurate.
Pretty accurate. We've got this race towards reusability. I mean, we've got, you know, bleeding SpaceX, but you've got Blue Origin. And again, I don't want to discount Blue Origin because Jeff Bezos is one of the richest men in the world and is willing to spend $1 billion a year on this.
Also walks and looks like a Terminator these days. Have you seen that?
All right, so let's talk about this for a moment. So they had this, like the Sun Valley Summit where, like, you know, where the Illuminati get together to talk about, you know, when they're going to build the ship to leave Earth and leave us people behind. They had the Sun Valley Summit and you get, like, you know, tech giants show there, like, you know, Sergey Brin, you know, Larry Page, you get, like, you know, Tim Cook, you get big giants in the industry. And in walks Jeff Bezos.
Dun, 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 dun,
Jason Statham going to play him in a movie?
Yeah, exactly. If you've seen the picture,
jacked.
Yeah, what he looks buff and built, wearing tactical gear with his bald head sharp.
It's just a vest.
Tinted glasses, and you could tell from somebody's body posture when they're walking with a purpose. Like, he is definitely trying to find and deal with a young John Connor.
Yeah, his arms are huge, like J.K. Simmons, Whiplash. His huge arms are huge. He's clearly been working out seriously, and he has said, there's this. Yeah,
1998, Jeff says, I sell books. 2017 says, I sell whatever the F I want.
So Bezos has made it very clear he wants to go into space, and he wants to go into space on board one of his own rockets.
He wants to go into space by climbing a ladder of his own design. He will make himself a perfect man.
I had a couple thoughts. You know, one is in Brian's friend Richard Garriott, you know, when he wanted to go into space, actually had voluntary heart surgery, you know, to go,
liver surgery. In his words, he said you have to be medically perfect to be allowed to go up to space. So he, you know, they're like, well, we found a cyst on your liver. It's probably fine. If you were a Earthling, you would live your whole life and never know or care. But it might burst due to atmospheric pressure irregularities, and therefore we're going to have to cut you open and fix that.
Yeah. So, I mean, he went to the extreme lengths to be able to make it happen. So Bezos is like, yeah, Bezos looks like the guy who's, you know, ready to, we're going to send into the asteroid with the rest of the, you know, the oil rig workers, and he's going to save us. I'm not a conspiracy minded person, but I need to be for right now. And my conspiracy is, what is he afraid of? What does he think he's going to meet in space?
Wait a minute. If you're rushing to space, you're probably not afraid of much in space. You're probably afraid of something here on Earth.
Oh, well, he's not afraid. He's preparing.
Preparing. He's Jack. Yeah. What is he encountering in space? What does he know that's out there that you need to be, you know?
Hey, all right, let me ask you guys a question. Because a lot of what we wind up talking around on this show, and not to say that we're avoiding it, but I think it's a background kind of non-sciencey sort of conversation, is that there is this changing of the guard in our society where we are seeing the rise of a new generation of captains of industry, right? We've had a lot of people that are now the richest people on the planet, were people that just got rich 20 years ago, right? New money.
We have our own generation of so-called robber barons, right? And it's happening to a much younger, more future-minded set of people. And of course, you know, the word robber barons has always been an unfair moniker anyways, given that, you know, so many gifts to the arts and to humanities and to healthcare and stuff have been the result of the Vanderbilts and the whoever else, all those old guys who are dead. But at any rate, but now, like, I love the fact that smart charity building is the new black. You know, this ability to spend billions of dollars in the most productive ways for humanity.
All right, let me ask this though, and before we get in, I'm not trying to make a moral judgment on whether or not they're good or bad, but let's assume that they are going to these conferences and they are negotiating with each other and they are setting each other up to understand where they are going so they can position themselves to be probably one of the most pivotal moments in human society, the moment when humans leave Earth, right? And they are figuring out where they fit in that. Do you think that in these meetings, posturing might become so important that Jeff Bezos would do HGH?
I mean,
there
first
are better
of all,
ways for him to have access to than that, but I know what you're saying.
Yeah, I was about to say, like, I mean, I'll do HGH right now on a dare. Yeah, do you have any HGH, please? But also, man, now you got me thinking, like, I'm like, no, I do the vampire thing, the taking the young people's blood that allegedly all the rich people do.
Sure, yeah, but I mean, there's a moment now at that Sun Valley conference where now we have everybody who's rich and powerful and maybe the most important age for it to be ever rich and powerful, and Jeff Bezos is getting all the attention because he walks in looking buff in a vest.
You know what's that's not wrong. Like some actuary, some PR genius can put a dollar value to the amount of generally positive free publicity he got by virtue of just looking that way when he showed up. And then someone else will say, well, we could spend this money and you can spend this time, energy, and effort to put into it. And then as a result, you'll get this free benefit. I totally believe that's what you do. The calculus, run the numbers. It pays to walk
in. It's like, when you're that high level, and high level is a phrase I use a lot, and that's somebody who's kind of working on all cylinders, you know, and I think a lot of us, myself included, are an autopilot on a lot of things in life when you're kind of that high level. And you're like, yeah, and I think I want to go to the space thing. It's like, maybe I should get in shape now. I should do that. Certainly, you know, you try to exert control over other aspects of your life. But to the earlier point, you know, we have this point where we have a generation of entrepreneurs who are in their 30s and their 40s who are among the wealthiest people in the world. We have something very much in common. They all, you know, they generally have like a tech or science sort of background, right? Which is unique. That is unique. Our first wave our first wave of tech science multimillionaires basically funded Silicon Valley and became the first wave of investors that created the next wave. You go back to the, you know, the Intel guys behind Intel, et cetera, and you find, you know, Arthur Rock and these other people who started that first wave, and that beget what we have now. Now we have these guys who are thinking on a grander scope. And I'll tell you, I think what is a very healthy thing is that even generationally, briefly, it's different. Like Bill Gates was building like the biggest house in the world. Zuckerberg, who's extremely wealthy, lives in a nice house, but in a neighborhood, you know, with other people. A lot of these people, like Steve Jobs, you know, he was sort of had the different mentality. You know, he lived in a nice neighborhood. A lot of these people, they don't live in billionaire palaces. They live in really nice houses, but almost like McMansions or smaller, because they're very practical. The old ring, you know, was like, oh, I'm going to build the biggest house and flaunt my wealth. Where these guys are like, you know, Bezos, well, I'm going to build rockets and I'm going to do that. You know, and you know, if you're Larry Page, you know, I'm going to have two flying car companies because I really want a flying car and I want to do that. So I think we'll all benefit from it.
Oh, yeah. Certainly. There's no doubt that this has brought a tremendous benefit to us. And we are seeing a rapid acceleration in technology and science because these people are in the technology and science industries, or at least closer to it than how people made tremendous amounts of money in the past.
So the story I was going to get to is that I've had two items, both say 2020 is sort of a destination period for it. One is the company Moon Express, which is trying to develop a probe and the technology to mine the moon, thinks that by 2020, they'll actually be able to put something on the moon to look for materials and actually start testing and start looking into that.
And this is talk about near term. I mean, there are Marvel movies planned farther out than this,
dude,
right?
It's the scale of things, man. That's how I think about this.
And so if I saw the right article on this one, it's a roughly, and I'm sure this was carefully crafted comparison by some PR person, it is about the size of an R2-D2 that they could land on the moon, they think, in just 2.5 years.
Something like that. Yeah. And there's Bryce had up the website for that, which is, and they're explaining the reasons for going there. And yeah, it's the Moon Express little moon droid. And the advantages of, you know, the people are like, oh, why not? Why go to Mars? We'll go to the moon. Like, why not do it all?
All of it. Yes.
Yeah,
the answer is
all
yes.
All of it.
I mean, there are different advantages
to each one.
That's the Oklahoma land grab, man. It's like we get to watch everybody just running out and grabbing their piece of space.
Yeah, that's the beauty of having a bunch of companies working on this and not just we can have a space agency like NASA, which provides logistics and support and
all
greater
right.
science.
I hear what you're always with your pro-big government agenda. You're always trying to say that NASA can do everything. Tell me one thing. Can they go to Mars?
Well, I mean, they have more successfully than anybody else.
Okay, I'm trying to set up the next story.
Can they send people there?
Can they send people to Mars?
I would. I guess for me, it was sort of a non-story because it's like, yeah, this is the same thing they've been saying for several years. It's not funded, so we can't do it. And so the question is, there were some hearings about space. We've had some really interesting developments in space. One is, we'll get to the moment. We'll talk about this, you know, the Space Corps, but. Their senators are talking to NASA, like, what about getting to Mars? And NASA's like, we don't have the budget to get to Mars.
And by the way, the most fair way to say it is, you guys don't pay enough. You don't pay us enough for us to go to Mars. That's
yeah,
not
exactly. Exactly. We want to budget this. We'll go there. And of course, Elon Musk has been very, very critical of the fact that, you know, the problem is, and part of the reasons these things get out of control is because they do what's called cost plus contracting. And in cost-plus contracting, NASA pretty much says, hey, we want this thing. And often it's something designed for only one or two contractors they already work with to do. And sometimes those contractors help them design the protocols for it. And they say, we want this thing. And, you know, we know it'll cost $10 billion. We'll pay you $10 billion plus whatever the overruns are. So if it goes longer, you know, it just ends up being, you know, ridiculously expensive. And we see that over and over again where – what NASA's embraced recently is the idea of saying, hey, you give us a fixed price. You got to deliver or not deliver. If you don't deliver, we're not going to pay you the rest of it. It's on you. And that's what's the crew support module program between SpaceX and Boeing. They're also Dream Chaser, which is another one, which is part of that program, doing delivery already to the International Space Station. It's sort of a more practical way to do that, I think. And we could very much be in a position where, and within 2 years' time, NASA could say, put out a call to SpaceX and Blue Origin, anybody else says, hey, you know, if you can get humans on Mars for $20 billion and return them safely, you get the contract.
How close do you think we are in terms of, you know, there's momentum and velocity, right? We are as a society building up massive amounts of momentum. And I think in our lifetimes, seeing the fastest velocity, the last time I felt this velocity was when the US was building a bunch of space shuttles and the vision was, you know, we'll keep flying up and down to space. But realistically, given the fact that all three of us are, you know, statistically about halfway through this silly journey, what do you think this – oh, no. Brian. Some of us are at the end.
Die, Brian.
Die. What are the odds? What are the odds that in our lifetime we see a suborbital flight, any of us, three schlubs, just being able to pay less than $100,000 and just buying a ticket on a suborbital ride, like in our lifetime?
A suborbital?
So I guess I know that's the plan of Virgin Galactic and is very likely to happen in 5 years to 10 years. So let's say orbital. Let's say orbital.
I think it's going to take longer than it needs to, but I think it'll happen faster than many people expect. I think that we've had such a rapid development in I got to talk to this. I was talking to Matt Ridley about this because, you know, Matt's of the position. Some things just innovations just sometimes they spontaneously are going to happen. You know, that you can things is sort of there's a market as a need. Culturally, there's a need and these things happen. And I've made the argument like, yes, but there are examples of things I could tell you where this would not have happened, would have taken 10 years later. And I understand in a century scale timeline, that doesn't make a difference. But you take a couple. This could have taken 10 years later. This could have taken 10 years later. And that compounds. And I brought up reusability of rockets. He's like, no, I agree. Because that's it. That's the thing that, like, without what Musk was doing, maybe Blue Origin would have get it in like 10 years later, et cetera. But as far as, you know, putting people on board and going able to do that, I think within the next 10 years, we're going to see that. I think we're going to see more tourists and stuff, whether it's on Virgin Galactic or something else. I think we're going to see that. More because you've got more funding, you've got more engineers, we've got more know-how, we know how to build these sorts of things. So I think it's highly likely. I think that we're going to, the other article I was bringing up was that, you know, Planetary Resources has said by 2020 they want to try to put something on an asteroid looking for water. As you know, there was I saw a podcast episode from another show. It's like, how are we, you know, who's going to pay for colonizing these planets? And I'm like, that's a backwards question. You know, like who's going to pay to colonize Las Vegas? You know, it's like, I think if it makes sense to go there, the people who are going there and want to do business there will pay for it, you know?
Yeah.
That's sort of getting over that mentality.
So what about you, Justin?
When do I think we'll be able to buy an orbital or suborbital flight?
And I'm defining that as under $100,000. In my mind, I'm thinking like roughly a Tesla, right? Because a Tesla is an aspirational, you know, none of us can afford a Tesla, but we know somebody can. And that's something I could imagine working 5 years to save up the money to buy a Tesla.
Isn't SpaceX going to send a couple of chuckleheads around the moon?
The SpaceX is doing that. They're doing the, and I think I know who it is. They're doing lunar free return mission. And then you have like Virgin Galactic selling slots. You know, they were supposed to be doing that right now. They were supposed to be doing be putting tourists in, you know, suborbital right now. So,
I mean, if the question is, when do we go from, you know, Peter Luger's to Sizzler, I don't know. 10 years, 5 years, something like that. Like, huh.
Okay.
Well, it's when the ability to get more seats up, and I think that's.
Yeah, it's scalable, and I'm sorry, I didn't mean.
My whole point was place a bet, and you know. A shrug is not a bet. Like I'm saying, call your shot for at what point
five years. you'll be able to book a seat on a thing that's an actively flying thing to do suborbital. To do orbital.
Wait a minute. All right. Are we making like a Blood Brother pact right
that's
now?
That's what I'm trying to set up. Let's hey, bet. Yes.
Leave with the Blood Brother thing. Let's make it a thing.
I don't think it'll be in 5 years. I think
suborbital. I see in five.
I believe people will be going up on suborbital, but they will be those early adopters who have overpaid early on right now.
Right.
I think within 5 years we'll be able to book a flight, but we won't fly for another 5 years. I think it's 10 years before we're at a place where any of us can afford to book a seat.
Okay, and you're talking when there's the price. Okay, when the price falls, not the rich person price. Bing, when bing, is the bing.
Yes?
Gotcha. Okay.
Exactly.
The Model 3 price.
Yeah.
So, that comes down to capacity, and so we can say, you know, it's one thing to say we could have the tech, a private company could do suborbital. When it comes to capacity, when it comes to being able to send, you know, regular people up there into orbital to do that, the problem is that we have we only have one or two human, like, launch pads even right now where you can put people in something and launch them in the United States. Okay. And there's other countries. There's only like, I think, two launch pads right now in existence where you can have people go up a gantry, whatever, and get on board a rocket and take off. And again, launch pad's not the hardest thing to do, but that does, you know, that's one of the things you get into the idea of the sense of capacity. SpaceX is building up Boca Chica. They're building up their own rocket launch facility there because they want to have bigger control. They want to be able to launch bigger things, et cetera. When you watch them show the demo of the ITS, which is the next generation spaceship, which we're going to get an update on. And my money's on it. He's going to do a version that could be built in the existing factories he has with the existing infrastructure. Which would mean a smaller scale, but the same tech of reusability. When you watch the video of them showing this thing going to Mars, it takes off from like launch pad 39A, whatever, you know, the Apollo pad. And right. So, and it's like, yeah, that's great. Well, if you want to put thousands and thousands of thousands of people on Mars, you know, you're going to need more than one launch pad. You need more than one rocket. And so when you're just talking about going orbital, to be able to do regular orbital flights, we need a lot of rockets. We need a lot of rockets.
Well, and not just a lot of rockets, a lot of places to launch them from, a lot of support, an mm-hmm. ecosystem, a commerce market. And it's the amount of behind the scenes stuff. I guess that's the thing is like right now we're in the G-Wow phase of like it's being done. Somebody out there is doing it. But that's different from the Model T phase, right? Like in the early days of automobiles, like automobiles are a thing. And, there was about a decade until the Model T became the thing the guy down the street had and it demystified it. Right. So I'm wondering how far off we are from the demystification of this stuff.
Yeah. You know, in my books, like Station Breaker and Orbital, I try to sort of put us forward into that sort of period and sort of think of like what kind of infrastructures there are. And I think of like, oh, we've got trade schools, you know, we're going to have trade schools for space research and space tech. And it's going to be one of these things where 90% of the jobs are going to be on Earth, but it's going to be, you're going to have a lot of people start all of a sudden learn how these things work and understand that. And that's the thing is like, it is even some science reporting I see on space. It's frightening how little often people who are paid to cover this stuff know about basic, you know, orbital dynamics, you know, understand, you know, little they understand about stuff. And, you know, that'll change because then like we'll start to get it like we do computers, you know, and there's a reason why, you know, it's like, it's sort of this abstract sort of thing. But as far as like the regular Joe being able to afford, you know, a ticket, you know, a few $1,000 ticket to go do a loop around the Earth, I optimistically would be 10 years.
But almost certainly within 20, do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. Unless there's some major economic catastrophe or anything.
Yeah, I mean, unless we're like eating each other's bones for sustenance.
Yeah, the biggest holdback I think is that we've got this, you know, we're in a wonderful position. Let's say in the phone wars with Apple and Android,
right?
And I'll get people like, oh, I use this or I use this. I'm like, whatever you use is great. I'm like, I love the fact that we have two systems. I have the one I prefer. People have the one they prefer, and it makes things better. And we have a fallback. You know, between SpaceX and then Blue Origin, you know, doing its own thing, and then who knows who else might emerge. it makes me very optimistic if it was just on SpaceX's shoulders. And I think that that company has a lot of brilliant people that could run it. And if Elon Musk says, you know what, I'm just going to go to the gym and train for Mr. Universe, I think it'll be fine. But the point is that if it, in a 10-year time frame, the biggest problem I see is, like, I had this conversation with somebody. I'm talking about, like, self-driving. He's like, no, it's going to be flying cars. And we're in the middle of Beverly Hills. I'm like, how many flying cars do you think people are going to want to have overhead right now? How many flying cars in this area do you think people are going to be comfortable with? Because I don't know if you've heard how noisy one little 2-pound drone is.
Sure.
Imagine something lifting 2,000 pounds and imagine 1,000 of those in the air, you know. And with rockets, it's like rockets are loud and noisy. And, you know, Musk made the comment about, like, the ITS, that rocket system, how it's the upper stage of the spaceship, the lower stage of the booster. But he said that upper stage, he says that's fully capable. He said that could maybe take off and reach orbit by itself in a stripped down fashion.
Wow.
And then he said, or you could just use it for, like, you know, or you could maybe use it for suborbital if you wanted to have a very rapid transport. Of course, if you wanted to, you'd have to, like, put it far away, because when the thing launches, it's, you know, it sounds like Armageddon.
Yeah.
So that'll be a big thing, is that, you know, do the citizens of Canaveral want to have every hour? Hey, you move there.
If there's industry there, then that makes a lot of things kind of different. But you're right. The money's got to be there. Like, it's a weird thing, because right now, for a while, my mom's house in South Florida is on the flight path for the Fort Lauderdale Hollywood International Airport. And that's a pain in the ass. And the community has lobbied forever to try to get that changed, because it got changed at some point in the last 10 years. I can't imagine if we just had more and more of those situations pop up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's the one of the reasons why we'll launch some missions from Cape Canaveral is when we launch missions in the United States is we launch them out over the ocean. So if it's launching from Canaveral or there's actually the two launches. There's the Air Force and there's the NASA facility, two facilities. Either one of those facilities, you know, it's flying from a west to east trajectory. If it takes off from Vandenberg in California, it's going east-west trajectories. Or it's doing a polar orbit because it shoots off the, like, you know, downwards. So, you know, we use these. That's because rockets are noisy and loud, and we don't like to let them go overhead. And then you have Russia, where the most convenient places for them are in the middle of the country. So that's why they land in the middle of the steppes, and they give their cosmonauts guns to shoot wolves.
Right.
It's going to be – I mean, we'll figure these things out.
By the way, I just had this amazing moment when I was like, I just heard that somewhere. Where did I hear that? And I'm like, oh, right. I read that in the novel that Andrew Main wrote that I'm reading right now. speaking of – emerging technologies and the changing shape of the way we as a society come to know them. You know, I think computers are a really good example. In the early 80s, you know, computers were strange and novel, and we had computer lab at school, and there were giant posters telling you not to eat or drink near a computer, do not taunt the computer, do not look sideways at the computer, and all that stuff. Man, we're going through that right now with unmanned vehicles, and I had a very weird things encounter yesterday. Did you guys happen to see this on my Twitter feed? Did I tell you guys about this?
No.
I saw. Yeah, you gotten into a bit of a feud with the neighbors.
A bit of a kerfluffle, right? And there are legit questions there. And weirdly, I totally understand my neighbor's point of view, and I can imagine being in his shoes and doing exactly what he did, but. Basically, you know, we have an Inspire 1 drone that we're trying to all practice to get really good at, so that when we've got it registered with the FAA, which is encouraged, so that if it ever goes down, there's a serial number and then they can get it through the FAA or whatever. And to practice with it, we took off and hold me to task here, Bryce, and make sure I get all this right.
Sure.
But we took off from my property and we flew the drone into the greenbelt area. This is shared.
There's a green space behind your house. Yeah.
Right. So shared common property, not over any individual's property. Although I would imagine the airspace is shared by the whole neighborhood, full stop. My guess is we still would have been in the right even if we had flown over this person's house.
Yeah.
But we didn't.
I A part of me wonders, because we were messing with some of that point of interest stuff.
Yeah.
And I don't know that we were really following the radio, the circle, but I think there's a chance we maybe were over his house.
Sure.
For
in
a
fact,
second.
For sake of discussion, let's give the benefit of the doubt that at some point in our testing around, we, for sake of discussion, say we went over his property or whatever, right? Yeah. But after like 15 minutes, and what we're doing is we're practicing setting up waypoints and flight paths, and there's some, you know, challenging, you know, nested stuff, and you got to figure out how to handle it when the signal gets lost and stuff. So we're practicing. And at some point, I hear ka-thunk, ka-thunk, ka-thunk. And then Jason Murphy says, yeah, that's a pellet gun. And he's like, wait, what? And I'm like, he's like, listen, ka-thunk. He's like, they're double pumping, triple pumping, quadruple pumping, ka-thunk. And so I'm like, no. And so I stand up on the railing of our deck and look over the fence. And sure enough, about 100 feet away is our neighbor, very, very close, very, very close. And there is he and his son adopting an aggressive stance, you know, looking to shoot, like basically one of them with the gun up pointed at the drone, the other one with fists clenched off to the side, and attempting to shoot down. This is a piece of photography equipment that cost me thousands of dollars. Thousands of dollars. It's, imagine a movie camera that just upon seeing it makes you so mad that you clench your fists and attempt to destroy this multi-thousand-dollar piece of equipment. So in that moment, what would you guys do? Because I'll tell you what I did, but I want to know from your perspective.
Hold on. Let's kind of explore this, because I think it is a very 2017 kind of thing. Because you are, from your perspective, you just got a new car and you are just trying to get good at it because it's a high performance automobile and you are safely doing the legal thing driving it around, right? But because, you know, good fences make good neighbors and you can't always see and do exactly what your neighbors are doing, from their perspective, you know, he's trying to get some sun on his unmentionables, and now all of a sudden the peeping Tom device is coming up and violating his privacy, right? And so now he
exactly.
calls sun
and,
out.
And I think that's the part that I understand, is that, you know, there's been a number of articles recently about people who have shot down drones and cases that they have been found to be within their rights because, you know, given their situation, they felt like, you know, this is not appropriate, and so they shut it down. And in some case,
can I just give you a little legal background though?
Yeah, please.
There's been a lot of weird sort of thing, my answer would be, I'd want to be anybody. Hey, it's my drone. Went over your area. I'm not intention. And just so you know, shooting at a drone is a federal crime.
That's a federal crime
to do that.
Yeah, that's a straight up because it is an aircraft. It is the same as if you fired a shotgun at a Southwest Airlines passenger vehicle.
Because whatever they think, like, oh, well, this, it's like you, it's a controlled vehicle, and if you shoot it and you damage it, you're turning into an uncontrolled vehicle, which means it can come down and hurt people. And so that's why it's a federal crime. It's not just a matter of property. It's a matter of like, oh, well, this thing's annoying me. Like, you know, it's really annoying if that lost a propeller and it dove into the pool full of kids there because you shot at it. So I'd be like, hey, just so you know, if it's, I'm not, you know, trying to doing a perimeter fence, whatever, they're apologize, didn't mean to invade your private, your space, whatever, like this. But just so you know, it is a federal crime to shoot at it. And
so in that moment, when you're standing on the side of the deck looking over the fence and you see what is happening, there are some words you have to speak. And yes, we all agree that in this fantasy scenario, we're all in the right. And the question is,
I've known you for long enough and I've seen you in situations that have put you into pressure-filled split-second decisions. And I can only imagine that it was just an explosive flurry that was more high pitched than you thought it was going to be in your head.
All right, let's log that one in the book. How about you, Andrew?
How would Brian handle it?
Well, how would you?
How did he handle it?
Because I know how I handled it. I want to know how a better person than me, i.e., both of
better,
you.
There are moments where I'm either. I was in a McDonald's the other day and some kids come in and they're like gang-esque looking and they've got a very, very loud, like Bluetooth thing. It's very, very loud. Okay. And I'm sitting there trying to work, and it's not like it's filling up the whole McDonald's and nobody's going to say anything. And I'm like, all right, what kind of guy am I? Am I a guy that's just going to sit here? And it's, I don't mind that somebody has a radio or whatever, it's McDonald's, but it was way louder than it needed to be. And I'm like, okay, how do I want to handle this? Do I just want to be the guy that just sits there and endures this? Or do I want to be proactive because everybody was bothered by it? And I said, you know what? My strategy in these things is I have to understand how the receiver takes the message, and that it's all in how the message is delivered. If I'm like, hey, jerks, cut it out, that's not a good way to do it. If I went up to him, I said, so I have to make them feel, one, that I'm not threatening them, that I'm not telling them what to do or whatever.
Way, in my mind, I want so bad for this scenario to end with you doing like an MC Scat Cat Streetwise character just busting out a bunch of rhymes and then
puts the chair backwards. Yes. Hey guys.
So I went over and I'm like, hey guys, is it okay if you turn it down just a little? I go, is it cool if you guys just turn it down just a little bit? And they're like, okay. And he turns it down. You know, his friend goes, well, that guy. So he turned it down. He's like, oh, okay. He gave me a look. And then that was the end of it. You know, it was just, but I said, hey, is it okay if you just turn it down a little bit? I'm like, is it okay if you just turn it down just a little bit? And it was like, it wasn't, hey, you need to turn this down. And if they said no, I'd be like, you know, it's not my McDonald's. I have no control here, so I can't tell you to do that. And I wouldn't be like this. And I've had that. It's like in movie theaters, you know, and somebody pulls out their phone next to you, and I work their way as what is the most polite way I can handle that situation. And I look at, and my thing is like, I'm not going to tell them what to do because people don't want to be told what to do.
Right.
So I go, hey, it's a little bit, is there like a brightness adjustment on that? Because then I'm like, I'm not telling you to put away your phone.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm just saying it's brighter. I'm like, oh, hey, is there a brightness adjustment on that? And they're like, I'm asking them a question like, oh, is there? And not this guy just told me what to do. And it's clearly, oh, it is really bright. So I try to find those ways.
Before
we get to what Brian did, let me explain what I would do. I would have stood up. I would have taken off my shirt and I would have said, hey, you, did you know that if you go to patreon.com/weirdthings, you can support this show? All you have to do is kick in whatever you'd like at patreon.com/weirdthings, and you and your son can enjoy not only After Things episodes that are getting to you earlier than they would otherwise, but also so many other benefits. And then I'd say, tell them, Bryce.
Hey, wait a minute. What if I could only donate just a little bit? Is that all right?
Of course it's all right. If you're trying to save so you can buy an actual rifle instead of just an air gun, you can donate anything. It is always appreciated at patreon.com/weirdthings.
Yeah, but is this a fully independent organization? I don't want to support any multinational conglomerates.
100%. We give you our guarantee that we are not supported by any kind of outside media organization that attends the Bilderberg Conference.
Okay, I'm gonna shoot down a drone first, but then
And then I would yell at him about the drone. But Ryan, what did you say to that man?
Was pretty close.
Yeah, Justin, you were pretty close. There's that moment of clarity when just the most obvious words in the world come out of your mouth, because it's like, I'm standing on the railing, I'm looking at a guy and his son actively trying to shoot down
a lot of confidence when you said this. I felt a lot of confidence coming out of you, but maybe that's bravado.
I was just a vessel through which the confidence flowed, but I just go, hey, a-holes. Only I didn't say a-holes.
Hey,
a-holes, knock it off. And then,
and then he waited a minute.
Wait a minute, and then I go, knock it off or I'm calling the cops.
Wait, did you?
Good.
I did. I threatened to call the cops.
And then you waited another minute.
Yeah.
And he said.
How did they react? Did they look at you? Was there eye contact? Are they still shooting? Like, what is the.
There was a moment of indecision, right? Because, like, there's so many vectors. This dad is now thinking, like, oh, wait, we thought this was just we didn't have to look in the eye of the person who's.
Thought there's some kids out there in the back, you know, they didn't realize it was you.
Right. Or they thought it was, you know, big corporation trying to peep on them or whatever
it was. Pepsi drone.
Yeah, exactly. Right. They certainly didn't think.
You just need to put a weed sticker on it. Just put a weed sticker on it.
They certainly weren't thinking, oh, this is very likely my neighbor Brian's test vehicle that he's, you know, taking a run around or whatever.
Weirdo brushwoods, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and so they're sitting there and they just sort of freeze and we can't hear what they say, but they look at each other. And I realize any further amount of me standing on the rail looking at them will be perceived as an escalation and a hostility. Like at
they
this
turn
point,
the gun towards Brian.
Like at this point, I feel like I responded in kind. It was inappropriate for them to
totally
start, you know, shooting at my drone. And I felt like I made that very, very clear and I didn't want to escalate it. So I, you know, as if it's no big deal, I just hop back down on the deck and we continue flying. And then, but all the while murmuring under our breath, like, are they still there? Are they still there? Here, take a look. See if you can see if they're still there. And eventually they went inside.
Trying to look on the drone to see whether or not they're still there?
Oh, yeah.
I might have done that. We did that. Might have been a thing.
Right, I think that's – sometimes you have to just say that to get somebody's – I would be hesitant to call anybody an a-hole who's holding a weapon. But, hey, man, it's your bag, not mine. But, yeah,
hey, man,
I get it.
We can't
sometimes
all be heroes.
Something happen. You just got to – you know, you have to say that because it's the only way to get attention, only way to bring it. And because if they didn't – that's the missing thing. I didn't realize they didn't know that you were driving it.
Yes.
That's a big thing.
And also, if I just said, excuse me, guys, can you not shoot my drone? I'm sure that would have been effective. But also, like, in that moment, I sought a massive pattern interruption, something that instantly made clear to them, you are in the middle of committing a crime, and you need to understand how woefully inappropriate this is.
I mean, I guess if you were going to say the most... like, pardon, sir, do you have any Grey Poupon level way to handle it? Would be to land the drone, go to the front door and say, hey, I noticed that you were firing at my drone. Just so you know, it's my drone and this is the thing that we're doing and we're practicing or something like that. That would probably be the most patrician, white glove, tell the story in church.
No, but now that we know that you're both on the porch and you can see each other, I mean, it's a different thing. That's a totally different frame. You know, my thing is like, you're out there down there on the ground somewhere and you overhear shooting and you realize it's coming from there, but where it's like, I'm here and I can see you over there. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yell at him.
Now if it were just all of a sudden people on the porch at Trudy's just like taking live rounds at your drone across the ridge, that would be a different story.
Correct. And that's the other thing, too, is that it's kind of a fun test case to wrap your mind around because it's not like he was discharging, you know, for reals firearms. This was a pellet gun that he was, you know, air pumping. And it's also not like I was spying on him. And it's also not like any of this is technically our property because the neighborhood has a covenant that says, you know, blah, blah, blah. There's rules about communal areas and all that stuff.
Well, part of it, this is very hashtag 2017, right? This is a unique thing that hopefully in the next 3 or 4 years, people know more of as these become more available. And listen, the gift and the curse of the fact that the FAA has kept such tight reins on drone regulation is that now that's out there. You know, listen, you guys are well within your rights to through the homeowners association or whatever you guys have, whatever governing body of your little neighborhood, can have a leaflet put out saying, hi, my name is Brian Brushwood. What you might see is this. We are a production company and we are trying to fly it. We're being responsible about it. And we are following all our laws. Here are the laws surrounding it. If there's any interference in it, understand that you're committing a federal crime.
Boy, that's the other thing, too, is there's part of me, and I'm glad I didn't do this. As a mature adult, I took my beef to Twitter instead of, which is the better thing to do because I spoke about it in the general and with no specifics, whereas the other option in 2017, and again, hashtag 2017, is to take it to nextdoor.com, in which I could passive-aggressively send out an email blast to the entire neighborhood.
Did you? You did?
I did not, because I'm a better person. Mm. I did it on Twitter, where I can up my engagement level and make money off of the dispute. but yeah, the true passive aggressive thing would be for me to send out a note on Nextdoor saying like, hey, just so you guys know, little reminder, shooting down aircraft is a federal crime. I'm not going to say who or what aircraft, but I definitely saw a neighbor shooting down an unmanned vehicle.
I mean, do you feel any, I mean, I understand now that the adrenaline has drained a little bit. Is there any part of you that does want to make peace with these people that are indeed your neighbors, you know, however many doors down.
You know what it reminds me of is the argument that skeptics have about what is the right way to deal with total BS, with total pseudoscientific nonsense. There's one side that says, treat these people as sovereign individuals and explain to them the truth. And once they see the truth, they will no longer, you know, believe in astrology or whatever. But there's another side that says you will accomplish much more with a bark of derisive laughter than any of those comments are. And I feel, and both of them, I think, have merits for different reasons. I think that I wish I had been the patient person who went over and knocked on the door and said, hi, would you please stop shooting your dad?
I don't mean then, but I mean now.
Right. But with hindsight, I think I'm okay with how I handled it. I chose the route of barking derisive laughter. And I'll stand by it.
I think it's a totally different app. I think it's a totally different thing. But I think you handled it right. I think the way you handled it was right. I have a big problem with that. Because it's a whole other ball of yarn.
Well, I guess specifically what I'm thinking of is this is not a one-off interaction. I'm going to have to encounter this person again in Pleasant. And I'm going to have to say I don't think I'll have a problem looking him in the eye and say like, oh yeah, you were the guy, you tried to shoot down my drone. What was going on in your head during that? And I think it would be okay. Like, I think he knows he was in the wrong trying to destroy.
I am an extremely proactive type person when it comes to like conflict, living in an apartment complex and stuff. If I have issues or something, I go straight to the person and I'll filled with anxiety. Sometimes I'll be nervous or sometimes about this stuff. Cause like, you know, I had an altercation with one of my neighbors over something, and I'm like, this guy is my neighbor. He lives upstairs. He was a complete jerk, but about what happened. But I'm like, I understand his point of view. It was just somebody had locked a bike to the railing on my stairs. Mm. And so I took it upon myself to maybe use some liquid nitrogen and a hammer. and I may have been doing this later than I should have been doing this. And this guy heard this and was like, what's going on? And da, 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 and I'm like this. And he got woken up. And anyhow, it was not a pleasant altercation. Saw him the next day. I said, hey, dude, I said, man, didn't mean to wake you up. I'm sorry for that. I apologize for doing that. I understand you're angry. Okay. I should have used a better mind like that, but hey, just, you know, you seem pretty cool. I'm pretty cool. Just like, you know, everything cool. He's like, oh yeah, man, it's cool. And he didn't want to have a confrontation. I didn't want to have a confrontation. And I just went and sought him out to say, hey, because it could have been otherwise. I could have been like, you know, very passive about it and avoid it, whatever. And I've got neighbors like, oh yeah, we don't get along with so-and-so. I'm like, have you talked to them? Have you just talked to them? You know, like this guy plays his piano late at night. I'm like, listen, like, and there's some things you can deal with, some things you can't, whatever. But like, I just talk to my neighbors. And I'm like, if I'm doing something that annoys you, let me know. Like, I use a pillow speaker. Would I listen to my audiobooks? Because I think sometimes my Alexa's too loud at night, and I think that the people upstairs, it may bother them, you know? And so I will go out of my way if I think there's gonna be a problem, I just go head to head.
Yeah, that's
here's the only thing I would say, and to add on to that, is that looking forward as you do more with the drone, and you know, God willing, if you are doing things with bigger, more technically complex drones, right, that might even make a little bit more noise, it would be good to just future proof other problems. And also you are never at a bigger position of power than you are right now if you greet him with kindness, because if you greet him with kindness, then now this isn't like, why'd you do that? This is, hey man, 2017, weird world. I can understand where that went. Sorry, I yelled like that. Just so you know, hey man, Brian, this is what I'm doing. If you're ever interested in it, and you and your kid want to help fly it or whatever, you're more than welcome. Now all of a sudden, you've completely diffused everything, and you're the good guy.
And truthfully,
a lot of people have those stories about, I hated so and so. We argued over this, and then, you know, and that's, I try to create those situations.
Well, and what's funny is, like, let's say the playing piano late at night or whatever, once you know more of their context of why they're doing this or whatever, you know, maybe you meet them and they're like, oh, I'm sorry, you know, I'm I have sensory issues, and this is the only way I can calm myself down before I go to bed or whatever. Now, every time you hear that piano, it means something different to you. The context changes, right? There's a great moment in The Seven Habits of Highly Successful People where Stephen Covey talks about being on the subway, and this parent is just tuned out. This dad and the kids are just running amok, just insane, and he's holding it in for a good 5-10 minutes, and finally he just says, "Hey, you want to do something about your kids?" And the guy says, he snaps too, and he's like, "Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. Their mom just died. We just came from the funeral. I'm a bit out of sorts." And in that moment, everything changed. And the only thing that changed was, of course, the information parody, right? So, you know, again, my guess is that he didn't pull out his pellet gun because he's like, "That god dang Brian Brushwood, he's flying a drone. Probably trying to practice to further his career for his family. Let me take it." Like, that's not why he did it. He projected a map
awesome
of reality.
It was, though, and he starts his own YouTube show.
Take it to Brian Brushwood's drones, the truth. Hashtag.
What if he's and it's a name I don't think that we could say on Weird Things, but there was the your constant nemesis in scam school YouTube comments. Somebody might remember it. Maybe that's him. He's now taking his campaign to the next level instead of just calling you fat on YouTube.
Yeah. Well, regardless, I mean, you're right. I wonder if there's an easy way. If I had the time, energy, and effort and cared enough, I would put a beer and a little note that just says, "Hey, grab this. Come on over. Let's have one."
That's what I always assume all texts is. At some point, there's a six-pack of beer, and then you guys just play slide guitar or something. That's how all Texas problems are settled.
You know what? Maybe that's what I'll do. Maybe I'll say I'll just drop a six-pack on his front doorstep with a little note that says, "Sorry for calling you an a-hole. Let's share this sometime, Brian." And then that's it. Now, total high
road. And then he gets mad that you gave his son a six-pack of beer.
Yeah, because my son was
you
drunk
put it
when
in
I
hand for that.
I never hear about it at the party. I'm like, "Man, I gave you a six-pack of beer." He's like, "I have no – wait, when did you do that? My son gets home at 3 o'clock. Wait, what?"
Yeah, I mean, I would – when they get home, I would just go in person. I've done like the note thing before, like on cars, they parked in my space in polite notes, and then, you know, met the girl who I ended up dating, a girl who actually didn't know it was her and didn't, you know, and then she's like, "Oh, you left that note." And we made fun of that note. I'm like, "It was a polite note." I'm like, "Hey, I understand parking's limited here. This is an assigned spot. It's the only place I have to park. I'd appreciate it if you, you know, didn't use this." You know, I'm like, "What did you make fun of about that? That I was polite?" You know,
I always distrust notes because I can't read notes in my voice. All notes are read in the voice in somebody's head in the mood that they are in right then. And normally whenever you see a note, especially on your car, no one's ever like, "Oh, fun, a note on my car." This goes well all the time.
All notes on cars have one voice, and it's this voice. It's the voice of somebody intruding on you as you're getting into your car.
That's why I use my kitty glitter stationery.
Yeah.
Hey, I want to do one small little thing that relates to this before we jump into Journey Quest. And I think we could talk about the bulk of this in After Things. There was a huge, they had D23, which is the big Disney fan expo where they unveil the plans for the future. And it was the biggest one ever, reveal after reveal after reveal. One of the interesting things there, though, was they're doing, you know, Star Wars Land is going to be called Galaxy's Edge, right? You follow this? You hear this, right?
I'm hearing most of this for the first time. I saw a few pictures on my Twitter feed.
Yeah, so it's be called Galaxy's Edge. Very, very immersive experience. And at D23, they had driving around a little robot, the mysterious robot that was kind of camera shy and interact with the people. If you look at Disney's Galaxy's Edge Star Wars droid, I think Gizmodo has some photos of it, whatever. And there's, the speculation is this may be something you'll see driving around the theme park. And I highly suspect it because this thing is like, you'll sometimes see like, they'll have like R2-D2 in a very controlled environment in parts of as part of Disneyland. They'd have the trash cans that move around in some parts of it, but there's always somebody very, close by. This thing looks to me like it's people proofed. It's designed to be able to move through people. If you look at this thing and the size of it, it's also designed to probably withstand a certain amount of abuse. And my question is regarding like drones and stuff, as we start getting more autonomous things between cars and other vehicles, drone abuse. I totally see that being a big thing. Robot where people are, it's going to start with some sort of political sort of excuse, like, you know, Antifa, which is just a bunch of violent fascists themselves, but, you know, it becomes this as excuse to do violence. That's, and I could see that happening.
It's a little bit like the actual villain Dracula dressing up as Dracula for a Halloween party. Like, this is an actual autonomous Android device that's job is to dress up and pretend to play an autonomous Android
right.
from the movies.
Yeah.
But looking at the design of it, I think that's the thing we have to keep in mind is that you had a drone in your backyard and people wanted to shoot at it. When we have self-driving cars and people see these things, and I think that people perceive this as a violation of space or morality or something like that, or the idea because it's not a person, I can abuse it or I can hurt it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think 150%. And even artistically, we see that kind of explored in Westworld.
Westworld. Yeah.
But there's no doubt that you look at that and you see the wide base and you're like, okay, so this is designed to not run over people. It's impossible to get your feet caught under it. It's probably weighted very heavily at the bottom, so it's hard to just push over. Unless you're running at it as hard as you can, right? Mm-hmm. That is designed to deal with the mass of humanity that's going to be at that park.
Oh, yeah. Man, but think about like how alive that space is going to look with like there you are just on the galaxy's edge, droids coming and going, aliens walking around and whatnot. That's going to be awesome.
All I thought of, and there was some amazing reveals about this Star Wars park, right? It looks fantastic. I think it is going to be...
I thought it'd be bigger. It's better.
What is this?
It.
A theme park for ants?
Yes.
But I think the biggest thing that I thought of when reading all of it is I wonder how much of the ambition to this park will still be there in 2 years.
Like, yeah. Let's save all of that for after things because I have thoughts and ideas on all that stuff.
Cool. Oh, Brian, you're gonna wish it was a longer discussion. You know. If you knew what was ahead for you in
previously on
Johnny Quest,
I'm gonna follow the footprints.
What? A talking giant sloth?
That my venom is quite relaxing. Many people say that it unclinches that which click clacks.
Steve, I'm gonna need a little light here.
Now it's quiet.
Oh, god damn it, Steve.
So for those just tuning in, Journey Quest is the ongoing adventure of Brian and Justin as they try to travel across country to rescue their friend Andrew and their other friends. Somehow they ended up and we don't know where they are, what's going on. It involved a monkey, a train, a giant mecha robot chasing after them in some mystical, magical valley filled with strange creatures. And Justin, like, he was warned about the molesting sloths and the raping spiders. And when he got approached by a sloth, he kind of seemed like he wanted it.
Okay. That's a real stretch, of what actually happened. And I encourage everybody to go back to listen to the other Journey Quest episode last week. That is a million pounds of hashtag problematic.
You're like, I think the game master wants me to do this. You're free to do whatever you do. And you're like just inventing. I guess I could stay a little longer.
That was not the case. And you know it. Right, whatever.
So where are we now? Are you cuddling with the sloth?
We don't know. We'll have to find out because, Brian, you have emerged from the tunnel on the field of battle as you're about to engage in a game of UGG.
Oh, man.
Talked about. Epic game that you have no idea what you're in store for right now, but let's just describe important how you're dressed. So you've got shoulder pads with spikes on them, okay? You've got like big chest plating on you, okay? You've got gauntlets with like spikes on them too, all right? You're wearing a helmet that's got kind of like a skull face, kind of like grill work on it. You're fierce. They pushed you. Your teammates pushed you to the front of the line because you killed your best friend.
Yeah.
To get on this team.
Look, man, some of us take the game of UGG real seriously, don't we, boys? Yep. And I shake my fists up at the air. I'm like, UGG!
Yeah, and fireballs shoot out of them, by the way.
Oh, my God! I look.
They're theatrical, though. They're not really.
Okay, but,
not
I,
really
but
like
I still, weapons. I still, I look stunned at my own power, and then I wave my arms out astride and spin around slowly, saying, "Are you not entertained?"
And then you see everybody in the stands has those too, though. They're like the foam fingers, and they shoot fire, and you're like, "Okay,
yeah,
it was cool, and I did it."
Yeah.
So. And one of your teammates claps you on the shoulder, like, "Man, this is gonna be great. It's gonna be great, oh, man." And like, "Man, think that you murdered your friend to be here. You earned it, man. You earned it.
You're darn right. And I'm gonna murder the competition. Am I joking? Is that a metaphor? Oh, one way to find out."
Claps you on the back. The only worse than murdering your friend is like leaving them out in the forest to get raped by spiders and sloths.
I wince. Internally at that, but betray no emotion on the outside. My stoic exterior. I look.
Let's
them in
take
the
a
eye.
Look at the field. Now the field is not a flat field. It's undulating hills of grass, and it's huge. It's bigger than any soccer stadium you've ever seen. There's actually it's filled with people all over. It's amazing. There's probably got to be 200,000 people here watching this, which is kind of strange because that village was really small. Unless it was some sort of Olympic kind of village. Hear what I'm saying? You know?
Okay.
And so you're like, wow. Look at all these people, and they're cheering. And then you're running along, and you're like, you know, you're going towards the center of the field. You don't know what to expect. And you see a big pile of dirt or mud, right? And you start running towards it, and one of the guys pulls you aside. And as you pass it, you smell something.
Uh-oh. Hey, guys, do you smell something?
And they're all like, yeah, I almost stepped in that.
What's that smell again? I pantomime scratching my forehead on the side of the side of my temples.
Just run along. One guy goes, I think that one's a carnivore. Okay. And then you go over the next hill and you enter the arena of battle.
Okay, at this point, I strike a dramatic pose, and as if I am a leader of an army, I am I holding weapons?
Just your bare hands, man.
Okay, all right, I point one finger forward, and I say, "Let's do it, boys!" And I do this come hither, like, "Let's attack the mountain" gesture.
And they come up, and they gather around you, and you turn to face them, and you're like, "All right, guys, here we go." And they're like, "Yep."
That's right, and I'm like, "And go!" Go.
Like, your team captain, you know the job. It's your drill. It's you first.
I say, and you hear
from the other side.
Okay.
Like, so, another team. Another right, team's on the field.
I say, team, come in. Team prayer. And then I say, everyone put in your dukes. And everyone puts in their dukes.
Like, we don't have time for this, Brian. We gotta go now.
Okay, I say, look, we need a clarifying exercise. The only way we can move is a single unit,
like,
as a unit.
Brian, you got to choose one now. You got to choose one.
Clarify that we're doing something.
Choose the left one. I choose the left one.
Oh. Ooh, there is a quiet falls over the group. They're like, he is the one. He is the chosen one. Nobody ever tries for that one. They're amazed.
You crazy, man. You crazy.
So you finally turn around and look over that next hill, and what do you see? Dinosaurs, Brian. Dinosaurs. Dozens and dozens of dinosaurs.
Are they dinosaurs that
should never exist together. Okay, we've got T-Rexes, we've got Stegosauruses, we've got Iguanodons, things that are separated more time than like we are from some dinosaurs, okay? All out there. Some of them are already growling at each other and fighting at each other, okay? The dinosaurs are all just packed in there like Jurassic Park, just squeezed into a soccer stadium.
All
right, Brian, you chose that T-Rex over there as your mount. grab your steed and lead us, Bri.
By the way, do I still
Ugg is basically kind of like polo with dinosaurs.
I still have a chainsaw on the one hand, right?
True that. Yes.
Okay. Nothing to it but to do it, boys. And with that, I yank and start the motor. And I just start running towards the dinosaur stuff.
All right, so you chose the T-Rex.
Yeah. I mean, apparently I did. So.
And you notice there's actually a saddle. There's a tiny little saddle on his back and a stirrup.
Yeah, okay.
Now the T-Rex gets a whiff and he turns and he sees you coming towards him.
I, as a mantra to center myself, began to chant the ancient code of success. I'm just running at him, shouting, up, up, down, down, left, right, B, A, select, start.
And then you raise the chainsaw?
No, it's off to the side. I don't want to raise it because I don't want him to think, look, if we are meant to be, this guy's either going to eat me and it's all over right now, or this might actually be meant to be. I have an unusual wave of confidence as I come running up and I say, Steed, I join you in battle.
It's a dinosaur. He's not like... Not a lot of neurons going on there.
I say it with fewer syllables. I'm like, we friend!
All right, he snarls. Argh, he starts gnashing at you.
Okay. This is like, I stop at the periphery of his attack radius. And I want to feel him out. So I want to kind of dance. I put my hands not up in a threatening manner, but to the side.
All of a sudden, in your helmet, you get a voice, and it's like, hey, Brian, I'm the dinosaur whisperer, and I happen to sound like your best friend, Justin, but I'm here to tell you how to work this out.
Okay, all right. Dinosaur whisperer, what am I doing here? How do I seduce this dinosaur?
All right, what you want to do is look the dinosaur in the eye.
I'm definitely looking him right in the eye.
Is he looking right back at you?
I think so. No. He's got an intense glare. He seems a little bit like annoyed, like maybe somebody left the seat up.
All right, now rev your chainsaw hand.
Okay, with my good hand, I grab the trigger and.
Now show it compassion. Reach out his hand. Reach out your hand and show him like as if you have food for him.
Okay. With my good left hand, I reach forward, palm up, outstretched hand, keeping and kind of raise the chainsaw behind me so it looks in my mind it's majestic and there's like I'm backlit by the sun.
All right. Now very slowly, rotate your hips.
I'm sorry.
Kind of like you're just doing a little. You gotta make sure that you're not threatening. So you just gotta just a slow rotation of your hips. Just swivel your hips.
All right. So I position and I don't want it to look distasteful.
Come on,
no,
put your back into it. Jesus. Okay, what is this, a middle school dance?
You can see me now. Okay, so you're saying like really get those hips a swinging, right?
You look like an A-hole.
Your dinosaur whispers up in the skybox watching this.
Okay, all right. So I'm giving it my best full rotation, full-on belly dancing. I'm at a rhythm of like oomfa, 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 oomfa. There it is. All right. Am I doing it?
What's the dinosaur doing now?
Dinosaur's jaws aren't open anymore. Its mouth is closed. Now it's sniffing it, Brian. It's really close. Like it's just you can watch like the breath of the dinosaur's nose just now, hit Brian.
Brian, I want you to stop your hip swivel with your hips forward.
To my astonishment, I look down and realize I can't stop. I can't stop this rhythm. This feels too right.
Here you go. No. Stop with your hips forward.
I'm trying to. It's just.
Dinosaur's getting confused.
Oh, okay. All right. I stop with my hips forward.
Now, here's the final approach.
Yeah.
With the furthest part of your body, you need to walk up and present yourself to the dinosaur and let him sniff you.
Okay. So I look like I'm doing the dance. I decide to make it my hips still want to move. So I do the Bernie dance. And I just sort of
Yes,
crunch forward.
Exactly. No, do it like Bernie, right up into the dinosaur's face.
Right, and so I do. I'm all the way out there, just my arms behind me, splayed out, and my head all the way back, my mouth an open gaping maw of ecstasy as I hope that this is gonna work and I'm not gonna die. Also, I really wish we had met beforehand, Dinosaur Whisperer.
So the dinosaur lowers its head, turns its jaws away so you can scratch him on the head. And it's actually a she.
I reach forward with my good left hand, and I scratch the back.
And you hear something you never thought you'd hear out of a reptile, you know, out of a, you know, theropod, like a purr.
Okay, I make that moment. I turn and I attempt to do that moment like from, you know, every movie with a girl and a horse where we put our heads together, our foreheads. I lay my forehead on the forehead of this T-Rex as I stroke it. Okay, I'm feeling...
Okay, no, move the hips again. Move the hips again. Yeah.
Are you sure? Are you sure?
Yes. Yeah. This is the final bonding. The final bonding.
I. You know what? I'm not feeling it this time.
You should. You got to do it. I'm the dinosaur. I got you this far. Just trust me.
Okay. All right. I start rotating in and hip thrusting as my four.
Tell it your deepest secret.
I whisper, and I was like, I love the band Sugar Ray.
Hear a voice say, dude, really?
And
the dinosaur turns and looks at you, Sugar Ray.
I mean, you know, the release 1459, I thought was a really, you know what that's about? That's about the 15 minutes of fame almost being up. Like, they never took themselves seriously. I saw them at Epcot once. It was fun.
Yeah. If you listen to their music, you know, they didn't take themselves seriously, says the dinosaur.
Yeah, like, okay, look, you and I have a hot date to clear this up later, but for now we got some UGG to win. Are you ready?
Get on my back, Brian.
Yeah! Now. I triumphantly hop onto the back of the T-Rex, and I take a quick moment to offer a prayer to the Journey Quest gods that for once I appear to have done something right.
And you head into battle, and it's like Brian, we're ready to take the lead. Your other teammates are on their dinosaurs. The other guys are about to charge us. And so do you want your battle cry to be like, I just want to fly? Is that what you want?
Yes, that's exactly
over the stadium loudspeakers. I just want to fly. Starts to play.
I'm like, rally around my banner. Four. We were meant to fly.
Lord of mercy.
So you start charging towards the other team, and they're on dinosaurs. You're on dinosaurs, and you see some people make contact on some faster, like big, thick, like, you know, Allosaurus, whatever. And you see like dinosaur rip the throat out of another dinosaur. You see another guy get eaten by a dinosaur, and you realize this game is real.
Yeah.
And your dinosaur turns and says, dude, like, I kind of want to make a run for it.
Wait, is this a trick? Are you trying to trick me? What's your name, dinosaur?
My name is Rebecca.
Rebecca, do you truly want to be
free?
Call
me Becky. You can call me Becky.
Okay, Beck. B-Dog? No, just Becky. That's over the line.
Yeah.
Becky. Do you know what's out there? Do you know what's on the other side of this stadium?
Yeah, but I also know it's waiting for us in the stadium.
Oh, you know what? Becky, do you know, how would we get out of here? We have 200,000 people watching. Surely you have a plan, right?
Oh, I have a plan, Brian. I have a plan.
Well, let's do it.
She stops to rip the throat out of a Brachiosaurus.
Oh,
and she's tearing through, like, you know, for a while, this wasn't like Brontosaurus. They decided it wasn't going to be a dinosaur, and then they went back and gave its classification. And
to show support as she gorges on the flesh of her enemies, I rub her in the purring place. Whoops.
She starts to twitch like dogs, a little leg twitch. It's like, oh, Brian, stop that. And an Allosaurus comes running at you, comes running right at you.
So.
No feathers. Becky shaves. So,
and I was like, Becky, let's go. Let's get out of this place.
And she says, all right, here's my plan, Brian. Next time on Journey Quest.
Yes. Can I say this is my single favorite Journey Quest we've ever done? One in which I don't screw everything up. And get to hear Sugar Ray.
That's awesome. This is a great moment. That's a fun one.
Gentlemen, let's do some picks.
Yeah. I got me a pick. I watched Glow. Finished Glow.
You watched the whole thing?
Whole thing. I really, 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 really liked it. I think that it specifically as a professional wrestling fan, I think it got enough right about pro wrestling that you know, you could certainly forgive a few of the creative kind of you know, things that kind of happened in certain moments, but in general, man, it just is to me, it's a one season in, I feel like it has so much more longevity than Orange is the New Black did. Just because there's more places to go and you don't have to tie every little thing into this very larger, more serious kind of topic of imprisonment, right? And why people end up in prison. This is just, it is about important things. It's about, you know, as the feminism and entertainment and where we were in the 80s. But it can tell it in a more, I think, lighthearted light, and ultimately I think there, that storytelling is probably better served to be a light telling of serious things as opposed to a serious setting where they interject light things. So I really liked it. And I'll tell you what, I was never a huge fan of Marc Maron's acting. I thought he was great. And I thought he really, really carried everything that he needed to do. So big thumbs up to Glow.
Yeah, I enjoyed I watched the first 3.5 episodes. It's on... I'm in that weird middle space where I don't know if our schedules are going to align to watch it with Bonnie or how interested she is. So I'm in holding right now, but I've really enjoyed everything I've seen so far. And one way or the other, I'm definitely going to watch the rest of it.
I'll give you a tack on pick. One is, I mean, maybe somebody will pick Game of Thrones, as that was awesome last night.
Yeah.
But there's a documentary on Netflix, too, which came out preceded before the TV series was made. And that is Glow, the Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling. And they actually talk to the original women who are in it. And you realize, like, all right, this is a TV show where it's called Glow. It's about girls in wrestling. It's pretty much where it ends. But it's still, you know, a neat sort of story. You get into the actual story of what took place there. And very interesting. You know, I mean, it's you know, there's some really neat characters. And you see who some of the characters are based upon, whatever. And, you know, there's some very touching moments in there because, you know, these women were joined together in this very unconventional sort of form of entertainment for a while and bonded, and then they were separated for almost like 20 years. And then they, you know, it's like, where are they now kind of thing. So I would check that out. If you enjoyed Glow, the TV series, check out the documentary.
So yeah. I saw War for the Planet of the Apes over the weekend.
Mm.
And the good news is there's still a chance that after Logan and War of the Planet of the Apes, maybe The Dark Tower will be the third best Western that comes out this year, because this was another straight up Western. Cowboys and Indians, only the Indians are apes.
Apes on horses, man.
It's great, man. It's great. It's great. And man, oh man, I know, Justin, when we've been chatting about it, you've been going to bat for how undervalued Andy Serkis is as a performing actor.
Yeah.
It's so much gets communicated with so little. The animation is so good. It takes you all of 20 seconds to totally lose yourself in believing everything you're seeing on screen. It's great. I liked it a lot.
Well, and you know, I right after we talked about that, Andy Serkis did have like a little viral clip of him doing the Gollum voice to like read Donald Trump tweets on Colbert's thing. But they did, I think, make some kind of an effort. I don't know if it was the biggest effort they possibly could have made to just they had a little clip that they made just for the show
that was showing Andy Serkis with like all the dot points, the mocap dot points on his head, like doing a little scene that slowly morphed into Caesar saying it. And you just realize how much his emoting matters in that performance, that that this is really he is a transformative actor. And I think at some point we are going to realize not only as a culture, but Hollywood as an industry, that mocap is going to be our friend, and it's going to keep actors looking younger, and it's going to extend careers, and it's going to give directors more and more of an ability to stretch their vision, not only in the big ways, like making an actor an ape or you know, a Dark Lord or Gollum or anything, but I think in subtle ways, in the way that we think of makeup now. You know, mocap is going to be more and more of an easy and flexible way to do that. So he is certainly, I think, a big part of that, and I can't wait to see the new Apes movie.
That's one of the, I can't remember where I was having this conversation, but it occurred to me over the weekend that we're for the first time in a place where, you know, you have these multi-million dollar contracts that extend for years and years and years. I think we were talking about Robert Downey Jr. And now like, I essentially, it doesn't matter if Robert Downey Jr. gets to be 60 or 70 or 80 years old. He can now, you can plan on technology 5-10 years from now being able to keep him the same late 40 something billionaire Tony Stark, right?
If they want him, that's, if he wants to.
Yeah, we already used, you know, in post, there already are a lot of tools they do for like de-wrinkling actors and things like that. That actually was even back in the 90s. You could have your news cameras would have special chips that would do. They were kind of like makeup chips, and they were designed for the color contrast of certain newscasters. And that's why if you watch like some high def stuff of like nightly news or whatever, because there it's got to be done on the fly, you'll notice that like all the skin is just weirdly smoothed out because, you know, they
because
use these sort of, you know,
that's a live on the fly effect that they're doing.
Yeah, it's a live on the fly effect because, you know, and they'll add that you'll notice that skin tones, all that is heavily controlled and do that. But like, as far as like, yeah, de-aging actors, that's getting progressively even, you know, more and more sophisticated.
I guess what's interesting to me is that there are contracts being negotiated with the expectation that in the future, very soon, they'll be using technology that essentially commercially does not exist yet. Like, I totally believe that that's a factor that goes into it from the very beginning.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of your likeness stuff and a lot of those agreements that you like, they have, like, they talk about like in any future sort of technology, et cetera.
Yeah.
You know? So, I mean, it's like a tool like anything else. It, you know, it's in the hand, able hands, it's great. You know, in hands that don't know what they're doing, it's bad. It's like acting, you know, and, you know, you could, just because it's a person doesn't mean it's great, you know, but when done right. And, you know, so it's very cool.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I look forward to seeing that movie. Matt Reeves, by the way, I think Matt Reeves is, as directors go, like, you know, when one of John Lithgow's best performances is in the middle of the first Planet of the Apes movie, you know, I mean, he's just he's, you know, you go back and watch. He did Cloverfield. He did Let Me In. You know, I think he's going to be doing the new Batman movie, and he's actually doing a totally brand new script for that. I'm excited about that.
Yeah.
I'm excited about.
Yeah. From the J.J. Abrams tree, right?
Yep. Yeah, Cloverfield, I think, was the first movie he directed.
I would make the argument that I would be probably put a new unnamed, untitled, I have no idea about it, J.J. Abrams movie in front of me and a new untitled I have no idea about it, Matt Reeves in front of me. I would probably bet that the Matt Reeves one would be better.
Yeah, and I did see some criticisms in the chat saying that the plot was a hot mess. I disagree. I thought it was a dead simple revenge plot.
No more. No
okay.
more.
All right, that's it. Okay.
Yeah, I don't, yes, one person on the internet said.
Somebody disagreed with me. Yeah. No, I thought it was great. I enjoyed it quite a bit.
Yeah. I've heard nothing but like just universal sort of, you know, praise for. I mean, again, everything's different. Like I love Spider-Man Homecoming, but there are some people who are like, I don't know about. I'm like, no, it's fine. It's fine to not. We can't all like the same things. You know, if we like the same things, then things get kind of boring. So,
Besides, we have objective reasons why our opinions are correct, and nobody else does. So that's
we do. I went to a Star Wars themed bar Friday night with our friend Riley Blanton, and you know, sat at a table with people who loved the prequels. You know, and
yeah,
you know, and it was people, and it's like, I'm like, it's great, you love it. I've never met a writer who loved them, but that's fine. That's fine. You know, I've never met somebody.
I got
like
an amazing picture from Riley of Andrew just sitting like a boss at the at this Star Wars themed bar. It's amazing.
What about you? You got a pick?
Mine was like the Glow documentary, and then McMahon. I'm Game of Thrones is back, and like my criticism some seasons is the first episodes feel like it's table setting. And here it's like, a lot happened.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah. I mean, number one, you open up, you get a big, big thing. And the end of the show, I think, does a great job of illustrating. I mean, just remember this. When I think Andrew and I first started watching Game of Thrones, either of us had read the books. I eventually read the books.
Oh, I remember I started reading the books, and then – this is a quick story. I was at my agent's office, and I was sitting the next row over were two people talking about how excited they were that they cast Peter Dinklage to play Tyrion. And this was before the show got announced. And I'm like, what's this? And I found out, you know, they're making the HBO is doing a Game of Thrones television series. And I'm like, I'm stopping the books right now. I'm waiting for this.
Yeah, sure. It turns out that was the right decision.
I remember when we were watching season one thinking, what happened at the end of this episode is like, man, it's going to be crazy at the end of this season when that thing happens, you know, as soon as, you know, and you've waited for it and waited for it and waited for it. And now it's finally here. And, you know, all I'll say is this: there is evil. And then there's watching a fresco getting painted evil. Like, that is great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No. Okay. We'll talk all about all of that.
Cool. Gentlemen, everybody good? Everybody got?
Yeah.
No? Dude, we're not just good. We're the best.
We are. Also, I didn't like Baby Driver. Moving on. Okay, let's end the show.
be sure to go to actionnewsgame.com.
That's it. Actionnewsgame.com on Kickstarter. Help us unlock the Beatles. You never give me your money unless you go to actionnewsgame.com.
There you have it. Gentlemen, it's been weird.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.